Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Luciano. Mike, what's going on today, buddy? How you doing?
Well, I actually showed up. I can't say the same for everybody on the New York Jets, because there is one noticeable absence still that I didn't think would get this far, but here we are. Of course, we're going to obviously dive into the latest Hassan Reddick nonsense that has happened around the New York Jets, because this is just... It's that scene in Futurama where they're working on like an ancient Egyptian planet and Fry tries to hang up a one day without accident sign and then he accidentally hammers the nail into his hand and the sign falls down. That's the Jets.
That's a microcosm of the Jets. If it's not always their fault.
Before we get into all of that, though, before we get into the usual check out where to find us, we have a very interesting new interview up on our YouTube page with Ian O'Connor. You may know him from the New York Post or his many biographies. Of course, Bill Belichick being his most famous one that he's done, a 4-time New York Times bestselling author, because I talked to him about his new book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, which I have got an advanced copy of here. It is really, really thorough. It is really, really deep. If you are at all interested in Aaron Rodgers or last season and what the hell went down, this is the place to get it. It's available August 20th through Mariner Books, wherever you get your books at. This is pretty good. It's pretty thorough, and we got a little bit of a peek behind the curtain at what exactly went down between Rodgers and his family and the end in Green Bay and last year with the Jets and his recovery. There's a lot of good stuff in there and a lot of juicy tidbits about his recovery last year that I think some Jets fans will really be interested in. So number one in the Jet Press book club. A recommendation, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers by Ian O'Connor. Go check it out. And as always, if you want to listen to podcasts, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. That's where we are. And we're on YouTube at The Jet Press. You could like the stream there. You could subscribe there. Both of those things are really big helps to help us promote this thing. But Justin, we got to go back to – it's because it's been a positive offseason. Aaron Rodgers looks great. Garrett Wilson looks great. Lots of new additions are all looking good. Olufoshanu, for crying out loud, is not even supposed to start. He was looking great, our number 11 overall pick. Lots of positivity. And then Hassan Reddick just comes in and takes a big, fat, steaming you-know-what on all of that by requesting another trade. So his second in, what, 4 months, 5 months?
Yeah, he's going for a record here.
I get that he wants to get paid, so – I'm just going to preface it because everybody's trying to win the PR battle with this thing.
Yeah.
Reddick's camp is trying to say the Jets knew I wanted a new deal and they're not giving me one. How could they do that? Fair. And the Jets are saying, well, you won't even show up and you originally told us you'd be fine playing out your deal. Why aren't you showing up? Also fair. So there's a lot of back and forth going on. I'm going to take the cynical approach and I'm just going to say everybody sucks. There are no winners here, and nobody looks smart. And right now, it's just a pissing match between Hassan Reddick and the Jets. Because Reddick, now I do believe originally, this is the part I'll believe the Jets on. Reddick originally said, I'm fine playing out the last year of this deal. Maybe we could work something out in the middle of the season, a midseason extension, but I'll be there. He even said as much in his introductory press conference, that was a load of crap. Now looking back on it, every single word he said there, pretty much none of it is true anymore. So I'll give him that. Then, as Justin alluded to too, when they get rid of John Franklin Myers, I think something changed in Reddick, because one of the main reasons they got rid of John Franklin Myers, who, again, good player, not a game changer by any means, but a good player. They did that because they needed the extra money to pay Hassan Reddick and keep some money open for Rodgers and Wilson and Sauce and Breece. Every dollar counts when you're trying to keep all these guys. So they get rid of John Franklin Myers, and now Reddick's like, well, they definitely got to pay me now. I want it now. But he's like, what was it, Veruca Salt in Charlie and Chocolate Factory? Was I Want It Now? That's what he's doing.
I was thinking of what's that commercial? I Want My Money and I Want It Now.
J.G. Wentworth.
J.G. Wentworth, 877 Cash Now. That's it.
Yeah. I went for the Roald Dahl reference. Gotcha. So he's very almost petulant now. Like, give me my contract now.
Yeah.
And what do you know? He holds out of camp. We're like, all right, no big deal. Guys hold out of camp all the time. It's mini camp. Then he doesn't show up, and we're like, okay, this is getting weird, but they have to be talking at some point. Nope. According to Connor Hughes, though, this I thought was interesting, and I want to get your opinion on this too, once because I think this is kind of like the crux of the whole. The Jets do not want Reddick. They want Reddick to report to camp before they even think about contract extension, saying basically he needs to commit to us before we commit to him. To which Reddick is saying, you need to commit to me before I commit to you. So it's just a back and forth. The logic being, well, we want to send a message to DJ Reed and Michael Carter and Tyler Conklin saying, if you're here in the building, we'll take care of you first and get you paid. That's fine. Those guys are good players. Hassan Reddick's three times better than any of them. Like, when this is totally different from a DJ Reed contract negotiation. When you consider the kind of player Reddick is, and when you consider the fact that he is underpaid for how good he is. He definitely is. And he definitely needs more guaranteed money. And he is still really good. Like, all of it makes, like, it's a really tough situation because everyone's right and everyone's wrong at the same time. Reddick should be paid more. The Jets should give him a contract. Reddick's also acting very petulant for no reason at all. The Jets are being really stubborn to the detriment of their roster, which defensively looks, I think, worse than it did, not terrible, but I think worse than it did compared to last year. Everybody stinks in this situation.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Nope. Case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you know, I think the message that Connor Hughes and the Jets are, because basically, let's be honest here, Connor Hughes and the Jets beat are kind of speaking from the Jets' perspective, and then reporters like Jordan Schultz, Josina Anderson, whoever, they're speaking from Reddick's camp's perspective. There's the two different accounts of what is going on here. But I think the message that Hughes and the Jets are kind of putting out there rings a little hollow, given the, I would say, lackluster track record the Jets have had recently with retaining and rewarding their own internal talent. I mean, just look at Bryce Huff as a perfect example of that. And we don't really need to rehash all of that necessarily. With the Reddick situation, it's basically one of three things that happened. And I've talked about this extensively on Twitter. I've talked about it a lot. Basically, either somebody's blatantly lying here, either the Jets are lying and they didn't actually, or they did actually promise him an extension and then they've gone back on that promise. Either Reddick is lying and he completely agreed to play this year or begin the year without an extension and then has gone back on his word, or this is a giant miscommunication. And I don't think there's any way of knowing exactly which of those is true. And everyone's going to try and play, you know, blame game. Who's to blame here? Like you said, Mike, everyone is a loser here. This is not a good situation for anyone involved. If it is a giant miscommunication, by that I mean more so maybe it's a situation where the verbiage that was used, the language that was used was kind of misconstrued. Maybe the Jets were like, yeah, we'll rework your deal. And Reddick took that as, oh, good, I'm going to get an extension before the season starts. It literally could be as simple as that, where it was just not communicated properly what the Jets intended to do when they traded for Hassan Reddick. And that possibly could be it. Or, like you said, and like I've speculated in the past, maybe Reddick did agree that he was going to, you know, they were going to revisit extension talks either maybe in the summer or during the season, and that it wasn't necessarily a requirement. Because by all accounts, the Jets are open to reworking Hassan Reddick's deal when Reddick eventually shows up, because he's going to show up. I mean,
there's no reason for him to not. The new CBA, it's too punitive for guys to just sit out.
We'll talk about what the outcome is in a second, or what the expected outcome is in a second. But when he eventually shows up, the Jets are going to what was I just saying? Oh, yeah, when he eventually shows up, my mind is scatterbrained right now. When he eventually shows up, the Jets are going to have to what the hell was I even saying? I lost my train of thought, Mike.
When Reddick shows up, the Jets
What was I saying right before that? I threw myself completely off.
So Hassan Reddick.
I don't know, bro. Go on. I was just saying, I had a full-on thought I was about to lay out there.
Well, really steaming ahead here. Now, here's one thing I will say that frustrates me about the Reddick thing, because I've learned that one of the things about how Joe Douglas operates, and I like it some of the time, but I don't like it in this situation. He finds a price on a guy, and he sticks to it.
Yeah.
He does not budge. Now, sometimes in free agency, that's good, because he'll make an offer to a guy, and he goes, fine. Test the market, see if it's better than this. And sometimes it's not, and he gets guys for cheaper. He's probably done that in trades before too. Find a better deal than mine, and then guys come back to him after they don't, and then he ends up with a pretty good deal. This is not the same as that. This is a guy who is, I think at this point, he just doesn't want to look foolish now. And he's like, this is what I think Hassan Reddick's worth. And again, there is concern about paying him $25 million a year plus going into his 30s. When I don't think he's as good as like a Myles Garrett or a TJ Watt or even a Brian Burns, who just recently got $28 million from the New York Giants. Like, I don't think that he's that good. So I get that there's concerns. And that's why I can't say the Jets are like totally in the wrong here.
But I do remember,
man, the stubbornness is crazy. Now, I will say this too, in addendum to that, because now it is a PR battle back and forth between the Jets and Reddick. And the Jets have already said they're not trading Hassan Reddick, which I'm like, good. Like, I'm all for player empowerment. That's fine. But like, if you're under contract, like, you have to play. You're contracted to play. I feel like that's fair. If you're a free agent, do whatever. Get all the money you want because you have like 4 or 5 years left of the ability to earn at this level. I'm totally fine with that. But you've got to play for $50 million here, Hassan Reddick. You got to. So he could try to hold out.
I do remember what I was saying, Mike.
By the way. Okay.
Brian in the chat helped me out here. He went back. He checked the transcripts. You got my last quote, which is I'll get to the expected outcome in a second. And I will get to that in a second.
We got a Michael Jordan flu game here because Justin's a little under the weather.
I am a little under the weather. It's not COVID. I had COVID like a few weeks ago, so it would be a medical anomaly if it was that again. But I do remember what I was saying in that essentially the Jets are going to rework Hassan Reddick's contract. Whenever he shows up, he's not playing under his current contract because he has $0 in guaranteed money left. He's being paid $15 million this year. None of it's guaranteed. It would not be smart, and it would just not be fair for either side to have him play under that contract. So regardless of whenever he shows up, whenever this gets sorted out, he is going to play in a revised deal. And that brings me to the expected outcome, which is what I was going to get to in a second.
Now,
I expect the outcome of this situation to be the exact same as what I expected it to be back in May, back in April, when we were first talking about this. I don't believe the Jets are going to extend him long term. I don't believe he's going to play out the remainder of his deal right now. I believe the two sides will work on a revised deal. They will come to some sort of compromise, a band-aid deal, whatever you want to call it. They'll give him guaranteed money. They'll probably up his pay for this year, give him added incentives to you know, give it up what he's making. And that'll be the outcome. And that's what's going to happen. Because the thing about this, and I've called this a fake trade request. I've called it an empty trade request because that's what it is. It's not a real trade request. Hassan Reddick and his agent are not making this trade request. They didn't go to this length. They have not taken this route because they expect the Jets to actually trade him because the market isn't there. This isn't like a Brandon Ayuk situation or other very many other trade requests that we've seen in the past, because for a trade request to actually matter, there has to be teams that are willing to meet your demands. Hassan Reddick right now, via his trade request, is asking to not only be traded, but to be given an extension, to be given a long-term contract. There is no team in the NFL that is willing to meet those demands. There wasn't a team in the NFL willing to do that back in the spring and in the winter when Reddick was traded on, I think it was on April 1st. Ian Rappaport confirmed that the other day. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. He said that no team was willing to trade for him and give him an extension then. So unless something has changed, unless the entire situation has completely changed, which I find it hard to believe that this situation has improved his value, then it's not going to happen. Then the trade isn't going to happen. No team is going to be willing to offer him an extension and trade for him. So Reddick is kind of stuck here. This was a last-ditch leverage play by his agent, and I get it. I understand their perspective here. But unfortunately for him, the market isn't there. So he's not going to get an extension because no team is willing to give him that. And the Jets should not be willing to do that. The Jets should not cave into his demands. They should not give in because it would be not smart to give a soon-to-be 30-year-old edge rusher who has not played it down for the team a four-year extension, giving him like $28 million a year. Because that's what Hassan Reddick apparently wants, if we're to believe reports. So that's why I would say that this is an empty trade request, and the outcome is going to be what we've expected from the beginning, which is a band-aid deal. Now, the most nuclear option Hassan Reddick could take, because he's not going to sit out the entire season, if he really wants to, this can drag into the regular season. They can try to force the Jets' hand as much as physically possible. But I think the cutoff date is week 12. Because if he were to sit out the entire year, he wouldn't get an accrued season, and the Jets would retain his rights for 2025. So that wouldn't help him at all.
Just to clarify, too, because I've seen the people say, like, oh, it's Le'Veon Bell. Like, Le'Veon Bell didn't sign his franchise tag, so it was almost like he was a free agent the entire year. This is different because it's a player who's under contract who's refusing to play.
Very different situation. So if he were to sit out, the Jets would retain his rights. He wouldn't hit free agency. That doesn't help him at all. He's not going to do that. I think the most nuclear option, I believe it's week 12. In theory, he could sit out until week 12 and then return then. But what does that do? Genuinely, what is he just lost 12 or 11 paychecks, 11 game checks by doing that, tanked his value even more because he's not going to produce at the level that you would hope he would, because he's only going to have a few games to do it, and he's probably not going to be at 100%. He's going to be a little rusty.
Himself look like a problem in the way he's doing it.
And who knows what the Jets will even do with him? Who knows if they'll even play him? I think they probably would, but it would probably be a situation where they ease him back into a bigger role as the season goes on. So I don't think that helps him at all. I don't think what he's doing right now is particularly helping him. So that's why I've been saying for months, I was expecting it to get done before training camp or at least sometime during training camp. I am shocked it has dragged out this long, especially just given the market that isn't there. Like, again, it's not a Brandon Ayuk situation where somebody requests a trade and there are other teams willing to give you the contract you want. There's not a team that we know of that is willing to give Hassan Reddick the contract he wants. So the outcome is just going to be what the Jets have been offering, which is the Band-Aid deal. Because by all accounts, the Jets are willing to do that. The Jets are willing to revise his deal, but they're not willing to do that unless he is in the building. And so that's why we're in the standoff we're in. I don't know when it's going to end because I don't know how scorched earth Renick and his agent and his camp want to go. I don't know. But realistically, logically, it should end as soon as possible. But if they're willing to go this far.
You said that a month ago, though.
Right, exactly. And so if they're willing to go this far, it could drag on in the regular season. And then that goes into the whole conversation, Mike, and I want to get your thoughts on this too. I've seen some people out there being like, the Jets don't need Hassan Reddick, right? That's a very common take I've seen said. Need is a strong word, but while I think Reddick needs the Jets more than the Jets need him, I do still think the Jets need Hassan Reddick. He is their best pass rusher. He is one of the best players in their roster. In a season they're trying to win a Super Bowl, that's somebody you probably want on your roster.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask New People, AskNewPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
That's why I'm just baffled. Everybody's hurting their value. Everybody's losing the PR battle. No one is better because of this.
Yeah.
Reddick won't be better by not playing. The Jets won't be better by him not playing. I don't get what you're trying to prove here. Like, it'd be one thing if, like, I guess if Reddick hypothetically held out and the Jets were terrible and then he came back and they were great again, he could make a blow. But that's, you need three or four other variables going your way. Let's just look at it as it is right now. The Jets have a good defensive line, a very good defensive line. Quinnen Williams is exceptional.
Yes.
Good as it gets. Jermaine Johnson, Pro Bowl defensive end. Outside of that, though, you got the two stars. Outside of that, they got a lot of, like, okay depth pieces. Obviously, a lot of it would hinge on Will McDonald. If Will McDonald is great, maybe they won't need Hassan Reddick. But we don't know that yet. He looked really good in the preseason. He's been really good at camp lately, so that's encouraging. But he's still an unknown because you had – again, I'm not going to, like – wring my hands too much over Huff and Franklin Myers because some guys just have to be sacrificed in the name of financial flexibility. It seemed like Bryce was one of these guys and Franklin Myers was one of these guys. And again, I don't think the Jets are going to lose or win any extra games this year because of not having Bryce Huff or not. I feel like really, if you look at it, outside of quarterbacks and maybe one or two exceptional skill players, the Vegas lines don't move much if players are out for a certain amount of time. Really, the quarterback is, he's going to dictate a lot of it. So just having Rodgers back, I think they're going to be fine. But if you want this defense to be as good as it was last year, because you had to subtract some pieces to improve the offense, that's just how the NFL works, which I'm fine with. But if you want it to be as good as it was last year, then you need Hassan Reddick. Because they were arguably the number one defense in the league this year. Or last year, excuse me.
Yeah.
If you had to ask me where they are right now, I'm like, I don't know, probably number six, number seven without Hassan Reddick. If you want like a top three, we're going all in on the Super Bowl, most balanced team in the league defense, then yeah, you need this guy. 10 sacks in a row, four straight years with three different teams moving all around, city-wise, scheme-wise, moving all around, still productive everywhere. veteran guy, super fast, will play the run if you need him to. He's not amazing at it, but he will. You need a guy like this because Jermaine Johnson is good. He's not half the pass rusher, just purely a pass rusher that Hassan Reddick is. You'd think Hassan Reddick, realizing that, would say, hey, this could be a chance to win a Super Bowl. I came so close in Philly. Let me go try it. And then you know what? Maybe in the offseason I can revisit. I know I could get hurt, but let me go try in the offseason. The Jets don't want to do it. And Reddick doesn't want to come in. It's just a mess. Because you could take – we could have done like a first take segment, and each of us could have said the exact opposite things, and each of us would be totally vindicated and coming from a respectable point of view. Because everybody's being stupid here. All it takes is for one guy to either, A, not be stupid and realize that this marriage needs to work, B, stop lying, because again, like you said earlier, all these barbs back and forth through the media, some of them just could be lying, and we just need to stop that and say, you know what, I was wrong, or be the bigger man. Hey, I know I'm pissed off that I have to pay this much money. I know I'm pissed off coming in knowing I'm not getting the money I wanted, Hassan Reddick. But let's just get this done, man. Because this isn't helping anybody. It's hurting my value and it's hurting the defense.
I think there's two ways to look at this. I think right now the Jets are handling this mostly how they should. I don't think the Jets should give in this on Reddick. I think that they absolutely should. Then there's no reason also for them to, as they've said, you know, engage in trade talks, whatever, unless he's in the building. They're trying to get him in the building. I get that. I don't think they're handling this particularly poorly. However,
in the immediate, yes, but
in the immediate right now, I don't
until yesterday they've handled it poorly. I would say
I think what I would more so say is that a series of poor decisions has indirectly and partially directly led to this situation. And I think it all relates back to the defensive line moves this offseason, Mike. The moves that I have been so critical of for so long, because I loved most of what the Jets have done this offseason. I went into the offseason. I don't know if you remember the streams back in January, February. I was down on this team, man. I was really down. I was down on Joe Douglas. I was very pessimistic about how they're going to handle this organization or how they're going to handle the offseason based on the moves that they had made the previous offseason with, you know, the catering Aaron Rodgers, bringing in guys like Lazard and Randall Cobb and Nathaniel Hackett. I was very down on how they would handle the offseason. And then they really surprised me. I thought they did a phenomenal job at the offensive line, getting the value that they did on guys like Morgan Moses, Tyron Smith, and, you know, I was critical of the John Simpson signing at first. But again, if he is your fifth best starting offensive lineman, that's not bad. That's not a problem. That's okay. I love the moves they made there. It just the D-line, man, like the defensive line moves, they're still had scratchers, and it's a series of poor decisions they made there that ultimately led to this. Mike, Javon Kinlaw, they gave Javon Kinlaw $7.25 million on a one-year deal. Bryce Huff and Quentin Jefferson's combined – or no, not even Quentin Jefferson. Bryce Huff and John Franklin Myers' combined cap hit this year is under $10 million. Lose me with they couldn't afford these guys because they could have. They've tried to spin the narrative. The only people saying the Jets couldn't afford John Franklin Myers are the Jets beat, who are spinning the narrative that the Jets team gave to them. The Jets could have afforded John Franklin Myers. The reason that they could afford it, the reason that it was a little bit more of a tight squeeze was because they paid Javon Kinlaw like three times what Quentin Jefferson got just to downgrade there, because they let Bryce Huff walk and brought in Hassan Reddick, whose cap hit is much larger than Bryce Huff's this year. And I'm still of the belief that Hassan Reddick is not a significantly better player than Bryce Huff. I think he is better. I don't think he's significantly better. And I think you already downgraded by going from Quentin Jefferson to Javon Kinlaw, let alone losing a guy like John Franklin Myers, who is really good. I trust Robert Saleh, and I trust this defensive staff. And then the other thing, but I trust them, but I don't like the moves that they made in a vacuum, right? I don't like it at all. And I think those moves, unfortunately, have led to this, because I do think the John Franklin Myers trade has a lot to do with why Hassan Reddick is still holding out. So all of those moves combined, I think, have led to where we are. And another thing, people have said, oh, you know, the Jets don't need Reddick. You know, Will McDonald's going to take that leap next year or this year. I hate to break it to you, Mike. And then I saw Matthew Dobson on Facebook saying, Will McDonald will feast. No need for Reddick. I hate to break it to you. Get ready to learn Michael Clemens, buddy. It's not going to be Will McDonald. If the season started today and Hassan Reddick was not there, Michael Clemens is playing 55% of snaps. Will McDonald's playing 25 to 30. Hassan Reddick being here or not is not really changing how much Mike McDonald plays, at least not significantly. The Jets do not trust
Reddick and Clemens, though, are completely different players, though.
They absolutely are. But Clemens is the guy who has been running with the first team. McDonald has not run with the first team defense also. Even in the preseason, he was not with the starters out there, like the starting defense, even with the backups in there. They were putting him in third down. That's going to be his role. His role is going to be the role that Bryce Huff filled for most of his career before the Jets actually made him like a starting defensive end midway through last year, because Huff was playing 50% of snaps for a lot of last year. But before that, and before for most of his career, he was playing 25, 30% of snaps. That is going to be the Will McDonald role this year. He's going to be exclusively used on passing downs. He's a third down specialist. That's how they see him. Whether that's the correct way to see him or not, I'm not offering my opinion on that. But the Jets do not believe he's a three-down player. Aaron Whitecotton, the Jets defensive line coach today, was singing the praises of Michael Clemens, saying yeah, they view him as a three-down player. Every time the Jets coaching staff has talked about Will McDonald, they've said that they want him to be a three-down player, but he's not there yet. So, look, I'd love for Will McDonald to be that, you know, take that Jermaine Johnson like leap this year. Barring a extreme change of events, it's not going to happen. So I'm concerned, genuinely concerned about the Jets defensive line if Hassan Reddick doesn't show up, because while Quinnen Williams is one of the top three defensive tackles in the league and Jermaine Johnson is a really, really good defensive end, I don't know, man. I think Kinlaw's a downgrade from Quentin Jefferson unless proven otherwise. But until proven otherwise, Kinlaw throughout his career has not been better than what Quentin Jefferson did with the Jets last year. And Michael Clemens is coming off a bad year. He wasn't very good last year. So I have my concerns, and I think that a series of unfortunate decisions that they made regarding the defensive line this offseason, you know, the John Frankenmeyer is one pissed me off the most. I know a lot of people talk about the Bryce Huff thing, but man, he's a really good player, John Frankenmeyer. Vastly underrated. We've talked about the most underrated players in the Jets. I always brought up John Frankenmeyer. Tyler Conklin's another guy I brought up a lot. He's really good, and they just gave him away for absolutely nothing, and they did not have to. And because of other moves they made, they felt like they more had to. So I'm still mad about those moves, and I'm even madder because now they're still affecting what is happening now in August, and that makes me mad.
Well, if Reddick was here, though, and play, I really don't think a lot of those moves – like, you could individually still be like, I would have preferred that they kept Huff or kept Franklin Myers. But
yeah.
I feel like if Reddick had shown up already, you're like, all right, well, Jermaine Johnson is the third best player on our defensive line. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yes, but one of the reasons Reddick is not here is because they traded away John Frankenmeyer. And so that's what I'm saying, where I don't think they're tangibly handling this correct or incorrectly now, but I think that a series of moves they made months ago have directly led to this situation.
Well, like, kind of bouncing off that point, though, like, as I've said before, we talk about system quarterbacks and stuff like that. Sometimes they're system defensive players. There is a chance that Bryce Huff just perfect role in Robert Saleh's system and went on a crazy year and a half heater, and then he could go to Philly and struggle. That is entirely possible.
Sure, but
because of that,
counterpoint to that, if your system edge rusher is the most productive pass rusher in the NFL 2 years in a row based on pressure rate, I'm fine giving that guy $17 million a year. That's even if he is just like, it's like Tua, right? Tua is a system quarterback, but he's still worth what the contract Miami is giving him is going to be, you know, like he's worth that because he thrives in that system. If Bryce Huff is the most efficient pass rusher in the NFL in the Jets system, then to the Jets, he's worth $17 million a year.
Well, I guess the logic then could be, imagine if you then put Hassan Reddick in a similar role. Because we could argue the degree of it, but I don't think anybody would say right now that Hassan Reddick is not better than Bryce Huff. I feel like we could argue about how much, but I think that's pretty set in stone.
I agree that Reddick is better than Huff. I will, however, say both of them had the exact same number of pressures last year, and Reddick played almost twice as many snaps as Huff.
Well, because of that, though, that's why I'm not as pissed about the defensive line. Because, again, if they had given Reddick the contract, or if Reddick had come into camp, one or the other, because one of them's going to happen. Either Reddick's going to come in with no new contract, or the Jets are going to pay him. One of those two things are going to happen. Had either of those two things happened, I would not have those same concerns, because you got a trio on that defensive line that they're going to be good enough in most games to get consistent pressure on your quarterback.
I agree.
Maybe not to the level of the last year, but if you're willing to sacrifice some of that for all the improvements on offense, I'm fine with that trade-off. So this could have been a perfect scenario, nullifying some of the concerns I had about the defensive line if Reddick comes in and now they're both just being crybaby. Hey, I don't want to pay you. He's not here. Give me $28 million at age 30. Like, if one of those guys shuts up, Reddick's in town, the Jets have a good defensive line, and all the positive vibes are back. Because, I mean, Garrett Wilson's been amazing. Aaron Rodgers has been amazing. It's been an offseason of positivity for the Jets. And then you got this coming in, and it's really overshadowed a lot of it. People aren't really talking about how good Garrett Wilson looks in camp or how the offensive line looks a lot better. It's all this stuff.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And look, my opinion, I completely agree. My opinion would be different if Hassan Reddick was in the building and he was having a good camp. I completely agree. I will end my point by saying one last thing. I would rather have Bryce Huff, John Frankenmyers, and Quentin Jefferson than Hassan Reddick and Javon Kinlaw. If you gave me those two options for relatively the same money, because it is relatively the same money. I mean, it's actually less. I'm pretty sure cap hit wise, the first option is making less money this year than Reddick and Kinlaw are combined. I would rather have the trio of Huff, especially on a long-term, relatively reasonable deal for what he's been doing. I think $17 million a year is relatively reasonable. Plus Quentin Jefferson, who was low-key very good last year, and John Frankenmyers, who is very good, than Hassan Reddick and Javon Kinlaw. I don't think Hassan Reddick and Javon Kinlaw is a bad duo, especially if Reddick is in the building. I'm perfectly fine with the defensive line. I just think it could have been better. But, yes, I don't want to be too much of a Debbie Downer. The offseason as a whole was very successful. I agreed with a lot more moves they made this offseason than last offseason. This is just the one thing that I've been critical of for months, and it's bothering me again because it's I still think impacting what is currently happening.
By the way, before we move on to our next topic, two things. Number one, stop acting like this is the biggest fleece of all time because they gave up a third-round pick 2 years from now.
Yeah, no, I agree with
you. Okay. And number two, did you see what they're having Bryce Huff do in Philly camp? He's like dropping back into flat coverage and stuff. And
no,
a lot of people have said like his pass rush needs work.
What are you doing to my boy? No. Yeah. I saw Fangio, which I'm not surprised Vic Fangio would say this. Vic Fangio was like, yeah, you know, we're hoping he can become a three down player.
And we did a segment on that. I remember like, oh, he's not a third down player now. Like, yeah, it's.
And I'm like, dude, Bryce Huff played 50%+ of snaps like all the second half of last year, and his pass rush efficiency did not drop. He's never going to be a great run defender, but neither is Hassan Reddick. It's okay. Like, that's all right.
Honestly, I thought that was part of why Reddick requested a trade because they had him basically dropping back into coverage as a middle linebacker at the time last year.
Which, and he was getting flashbacks from early in his career when he was asked to do that all the time when he was playing off ball linebacker. Yeah.
I will say, though, if they're saying his pass rush is a concern, that's a problem because
they're just wrong.
If it isn't looking good, that's a problem. Like, it is good, but if it's.
Can I rush the passer? Like.
Moving on, we got another Jets redemption story here, another possible Geno Smith or possible Zach Wilson, who's probably not going to make the Broncos roster.
He had a pretty good Wilson had an all right first preseason game. I see Broncos reporters saying they think he's going to make the team now.
Yeah, do you know where else he had a lot of all right preseason games?
No, I know. I'm just saying I think he's going to make the team. I'm not. Look, man, I'm not trying to be a Zach Wilson defender. I'm just saying I think he's making a team. Probably.
I don't think he's – if he is, he's not playing anyway.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, Sam Darnold was going to be the starter for the Vikings and then kind of a bridge guy until J.J. McCarthy's ready. J.J. McCarthy's out for the year.
Yeah.
Meniscus injury, incredibly unfortunate. I feel bad for the guy. But now, because the only other quarterbacks on their roster right now are Nick Mullins and Jared Hall, Darnold is the guy. For Minnesota, and do you remember when he first went to Carolina and he won like his first three games?
Oh yeah!
What were the Jets doing? I can't but remember that, and then regressed to the mean, and we're like, that's what we were thinking. Pretty obvious, clear as day. Now, here's what concerns me about this thing: offensive coach and a good one, Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah,
running the Sean McVay offense or his version.
Former Jets quarterback Kevin O'Connell, am I correct?
Yeah, because he went from the Patriots to the Jets, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever played a game with the Jets, but he was on their roster.
Yeah, picked in the third round and never played, which is tough. But
yeah,
it's better those who can't teach. So
yes,
so a good offensive coach, Justin Jefferson,
yep,
DJ Hockenson, Jordan Addison, offensive line that's decent, division not crazy hard. There are more ingredients here where I could say Darnold could be a success than there were in Carolina. There's more Geno Smith potential here, even though I don't think Darnold's particularly good. And we've seen what can happen when teams kind of trust Darnold and they're like, all right, go and win us a game. And then he's throwing off his back foot, spinning in midair and getting picked because it worked at USC. It doesn't work now. Minnesota has enough pieces where I'm like, he actually could do something here.
He could. Yeah, I was about to bring this up. Brian said this. Jordan Addison got carted out of practice today.
What was happening with the Vikings?
The Vikings are cursed, dude. I genuinely, we were talking about this right before the show, before I even saw Addison was carted off. I saw that during the show. I feel so bad for Vikings fans. Like, I genuinely do. They're not like, you said they're like kind of like the Jets of the NFC. They're the Jets of the NFC, but they're always a good team. They just, something bad always seems to happen to them. Like, when they lose, it's in heartbreaking fashion. Like, crazy shit happens. I mean, look at just their draft class this year. When they drafted J.J. McCarthy, he's already out for the year. They drafted a corner in Kyrie Jackson, who was unfortunately passed away. Like, there's just so much unfortunate.
Lewis Green was a first-round pick. I don't think he's played yet in 2 years.
Did they already also lose one of their other starting corners as well?
Ty Blackman tore his ACL.
Yeah. Like, it's actually insane what is going on to this poor franchise. So
I mean, just look at 1998. They went 15-1 and had the most points ever. And then Gary Anderson, who had never missed a kick all year, misses the kick to send him to the Super Bowl.
Vikings and kicker Blair Walsh. Like, it's just, there's so much history with this organization. So, yeah, I mean, all that said, it's still not a bad situation for Sam Darnold here. Even if, I mean, let's hope Jordan Addison's okay, and let's hope he can stay out of trouble as well, because that's been an issue with him too. But TJ Hockenson, whenever he returns, he's one of the best tight ends in the NFL. Justin Jefferson is the best wide receiver in the NFL. Don't at me, Tyreek Hill, whatever. Justin Jefferson is the best wide receiver in the NFL. Kevin O'Connell, very good offensive line. This is a good team, man. And the offensive line is not bad. Specifically, their tackles are very good. Christian Darrisaw is really good. Brian O'Neill is very good. They got good tackles. Their offensive line is not bad. This is a good situation for Sam Darnold. And I know a lot of people are like saying, oh, he's going to be this year's Baker Mayfield. There is not a Baker Mayfield situation every single year. But if
Baker Mayfield is also better by a lot before.
Yes, we've seen Baker Mayfield play at a higher level than we've ever seen Sam Darnold play at. But if there was going to be a Baker Mayfield this year, Darnold makes sense. He's in an offensive system that is very, very kind to quarterbacks. As you know, we've seen Kirk Cousins do well in under Kevin O'Connell. I think we might be able to see Sam Darnold do well under Kevin O'Connell, kind of like how Baker was able to rejuvenate his career under Dave Canales in Tampa. It's a good situation for him. I will be rooting for him. We'll see what ends up happening, but it's a golden opportunity for him. And you know what's going to happen, Mike, if he does do well. Like, all the conversations, even though he failed in Carolina, was a backup in San Francisco, all the conversations will be like, oh, the Jets couldn't do anything with him. Which, to be fair, some of that is kind of going to be true. Like, the Jets, more so than any quarterback in recent Jets history, the Jets are absolutely partially and largely to blame for Sam Darnold's lack of development. I mean, the supporting cast and coaching staff that they surrounded him with when he was with the team is just, it's criminal, like genuinely criminal. But yeah, I hope he can succeed. It would be cool if both him and Geno Smith, I know Darnold isn't as late career as Geno. Geno didn't do this until he was like 32, but it would be cool if both of them forged successful NFL careers. Now, I don't think Darnold is going to be the long-term answer in Minnesota. Obviously, they just drafted J.J. McCarthy. So really, this is an audition year for Sam Darnold to show that he can still be, or that he just can be, a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. If he has a successful year this year, maybe he gets an opportunity with another team next year in free agency. Probably won't be the Vikings, but hey, man, this is his opportunity. This is a golden opportunity.
Before we move on to our last two segments, I want to play a little bit of a game here, like a Jet Family Feud.
Oh, I love this. Okay, go.
I'm Richard Dawson. Welcome to Jet Family Feud.
You're going to be Steve Harvey? You're an old guy here? Come on.
Yeah, I'm an old guy. What was the other guy? John O'Hurley? I'll do that.
I don't know. I know the other guy. I don't know who that is.
They're like the older ones. I'm Richard Dawson. All right.
I know Richard Dawson.
Top five answers on the board. Name Sam Darnold, one of Sam Darnold's top five targets in his NFL career.
Oh, okay. Jamison Crowder has got to be one.
Bing, he's number two.
Number two?
He's number two. So that tells you the kind of guys he's playing.
I know one. It's Robbie Anderson.
Chosen,
sure. He went same with Carolina. Yeah, okay.
He's number one. 229 targets. That's the most.
Is Le'Veon Bell on there?
He's not in the top five, okay. But he's number six. So he's
Rashad
not in the top
Perry. Five. Rashad Perryman?
Nope.
Okay, I love this. Hold on. I want to keep doing this. Are they all on the Jets? Or
two on the Jets, one from the Panthers.
DJ Moore?
DJ Moore's number three.
Okay, okay. And there's two on the Jets left?
Two on the Jets.
It's like Austin's – no, Austin's Vernon Jenkins was 2018. There's probably not a tight end. Surely not.
There is.
There is a tight end? Is it Austin's Vernon Jenkins?
No.
Damn, who the hell was the tight end? Oh, Chris Herndon. It's Chris
Herndon. Herndon's number four.
Okay, okay. And I'm missing probably a wide receiver. Is it a wide receiver?
It is a wide receiver.
God, it's not.
It's not Ryan Griffin, Brian, and Chet.
It's not going to be Deontay Burnett, but wouldn't that be hilarious?
Certainly not.
Oh, is it Jermaine Kearse?
It's Jermaine Kearse.
Oh, baby.
He's number five.
Wow, that was fun.
So Robbie chosen Crowder. Jameson Crowder, DJ Moore for a year where he had 147 targets.
Yep.
Chris Herndon and Jermaine Kearse. Those are
Sam Darnold. And then Le'Veon is six. So I got the top six.
Le'Veon is six.
Ryan said Ryan. I bet Ryan Griffin's top 10, which is
kind of. He is crazy. Six, seven, eight, 10th.
Yep. I
but Ryan Griffin had 37 catches. Jermaine Kearse only had 29.
Wow. Those. Look at that.
Yeah.
High catch rate. Good for him.
So, yeah, that tells you the talent that he's played with.
We should do like a little Family Feud style game every week. That'd be really fun.
Yeah, top five whatevers.
Yeah, had a good time. That was good.
Sorry. New content ideas on the Jet Press. You just saw great. How the sausage gets made.
That was great. So,
let's go back and talk about some actual football that happened.
Let's talk preseason, man.
Yeah, the Jets actually played a preseason game. They looked pretty good.
They did.
Against the Washington Commanders. Now, Tyrod Taylor only played two drives, and he had -1 yards passing, so less than all of the Jet Press listeners combined. Passing in that game.
Unless one of the Jet Press listeners is Andrew Peasley or Adrian Martinez.
Unless in the highly unlikely possibility that they're in there.
Hey, you don't know, man. You don't know.
But they both came in. And they were both pretty good, I thought.
I think Andrew Peasley follows the Jet Press on Twitter. So, hey, man, look, you don't
there
know.
There you go.
You don't know.
Andrew, now, if you look at EPA per drive based on the first preseason games, both of the Jets quarterbacks were in the top 10. Adrian Martinez was fourth in EPA per drive, and Andrew Peasley was number eight.
Hell yeah.
So both of them look like QB3s in the NFL. Like, sometimes preseason stuff is fluky, but that throw from Peasley to the touchdown throw,
yeah,
that was an NFL throw.
It was. It was very
and Adrian Martinez looked really elusive and like a really good playmaker. I think they could both be solid QB3s. And I think that if they keep this up, maybe the Jets' hand gets forced and they're like, okay, we got to keep three quarterbacks on the active roster.
Yeah, it's very possible. I know when we were doing our 53-man roster predictions last week, I only had them keeping two, but it is very possible that if one of Peasley or Martinez or even both of them really impress over the last two preseason games, that they're like, we don't want to subject these guys to waivers. We want to keep them both around on the active roster. And maybe they do just say, hey, this is a redshirt year for Jordan Travis. Maybe he's out for the year, and maybe they keep one of them on the practice squad, one of them on the active roster. It's totally possible. Or maybe they activate Travis. They could, in theory, keep two quarterbacks in the practice squad as well. Either way, it is a very good problem to have. And it's such a, like, it's so hilarious that we went from last year, the Jets had one NFL caliber quarterback on the roster, which was Aaron Rodgers, and he got hurt in the first game. And the rest of the season, they did not roster a single other NFL caliber quarterback on their roster, unless you want to say Trevor Siemian. But in 2024, I'm not sure we're calling Trevor Siemian an NFL caliber quarterback anymore. But definitely was not Tim Boyle. Definitely was not Zach Wilson. So it's crazy that they went from that to now we're talking about they might have like five. Like, isn't that kind of wild? We don't want to overreact to one preseason game. A lot can happen. Andrew Peasley could come out on Saturday and throw four picks. I have no idea what's going to happen. But based on what we saw just in that one preseason game, Peasley was safe with the ball. He was making the right reads. That one throw to Brownlee was very, very impressive. And then Martinez, like, completely different stylistically from Peasley. I mean, showing his elusiveness, his escapability in the pocket. I thought he showed good pocket presence, too, on a couple of those plays. Like, that's always a thing when you get to worry about with quarterbacks that try to extend plays a lot. You see this all the time. Like, Zach Wilson has this issue where your pocket presence is just really bad and you don't sense the pressure. I thought Martinez did a really good job sensing pressure in that game, and that was very impressive for me, for a guy who I remember that being an issue for him coming into college and being an issue for him in Nebraska. And yeah, I can't say I watched too much of his UFL tape, but I imagine it probably wasn't fixed all the way there too. So very, very encouraged by that. And then those two, those two passes to Brandon Smith, man. Like, that UFL connection, like, that was crazy. The one where he's throwing on the run to Smith, that was one of the best throws I've seen by a Jets quarterback in a while, which is crazy to say, but it's true. Obviously, it's not just those two throws, and we want to see it more so. You know, we want to see it happen again this Saturday. We want to see it happen against the Giants as well. But, man, very, very encouraged, very, very impressive games by Peasley and Martinez. And that QB3 competition, it's heating up, man. It's very fun.
And looking at the rookies, too, because I was obviously watching the rookies, and Isaiah Davis had a couple of nice receptions, like a long one, I remember, like 20-something yards. Malachi Corley looked like the Malachi Corley that we expected out of Western Kentucky.
The play where Kuntz dropped it, and he just – that was like – that was, I feel like, quintessential Malachi Corley, just like making something out of nothing, which is what he did for a while at Western Kentucky.
I got to say, though, how good does Braylon Allen look? Oh, my word.
Hell yeah. Six
carries, 54 yards. And he was not a lot of them were before contact. He was dragging a lot of guys with him.
Yep, he's legit.
Now, it sounds weird for a late fourth round pick to be viewed as such an emphatic part of the offense, but we live in a world where it's possible where Braylon Allen and Garrett Wilson get a similar amount of touches this season because of how much Nathaniel Hackett likes to split up running back carries. Going that hard. Well, Nathaniel Hackett likes to split up running back carries. Breece Hall is going to get like 50, 60 catches, I think.
Yeah.
Because they just showed his value as a receiver. Allen's not really there as a receiver yet. But, man, you tell him, go that way, here's the ball. He freaking goes that way and runs over guys. And you saw that at Wisconsin, but I think the last year he didn't really do it enough. It was a lot of dancing. But when he just goes that way, he is a really impressive power back.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go as far as he's going to have similar touches to Garrett Wilson, but I do think he's going to be important by the offense.
Garrett Wilson has 120 catches or 110 catches.
Yeah.
Won't he?
We'll see. But I do like what you said at the end there where it's like at Wisconsin, I feel like one of the biggest criticisms of him was he looked amazing his freshman year, his first season at Wisconsin. Then by the time his third year came around, there was a criticism because he's huge. Like, dude is built like a tank. He's a monster. He's built like Marshawn Lynch or whoever. Built
Marshawn
like
Lynch was small. This guy's built, right, like
A.J. Dillon or whoever, Derek, right?
Henry, I think, is a good physical comp.
Built, yeah, sure. Built like Derek Henry, built like A.J. Dillon, whatever. But
Brandon Jacobs.
He's huge. But the criticism was his last year at Wisconsin, he wasn't running or he wasn't utilizing his power as much as he probably could have. I think based on what we saw in that first game, the Jets coaching staff has kind of drilled that into him. Like, hey, dude, you're 6'2", 235 pounds or whatever he is. You should probably utilize that. And he did. And even more so to me because, you know, he's 20 years old. Like, this, he is the youngest guy in the NFL. He does not turn 21 until January. He's going to be 20 his entire rookie season. He's going to be the youngest player in Jets history when he takes a snap this year. But despite that, he looks NFL ready. Like, that was my biggest takeaway from that was that, like, his game looks ready to translate to the NFL immediately. It's not just like the bigger stuff, the splash plays. I thought pass blocking, he held up in pass protection very, very well. I thought he did a very good job in his few reps there. And then the other play that stood out to me was something that didn't even count was the play that was called back. I think it was Xavier Newman was an eligible man downfield, but I believe it was still Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. Tyrod Taylor scrambling out to his right. I think it was third and long. Braylon Allen had a flat route, and as Taylor's scrambling out to his right, Allen notices this, that Taylor's scrambling out. He breaks off his route, breaks and cuts upfield, finds the open space in the defense, finds the marker, and catches a pass for what would have been a first down. Unfortunately, Xavier Newman was an illegal man downfield, and the play was called back. But that is such a savvy play for a 20-year-old running back to make. Like, that
hasn't even played running back for that. He was a linebacker recruit.
Right. Like, and that's such a smart play for him to be able to break off that route, notice what's going on in that situation, find the open spot, and know where the marker is. That's an NFL-ready running back right there. And that play didn't even count, and I don't see a lot of people talking about it. But of all the plays I think he made on Saturday, like, that was one of the most impressive ones to me that stood out, where I was like, okay, this guy's not only ready to, be a part of the offense, but he could be an important part of the offense. Like, I think he can genuinely be have a sizable role with this team. Obviously, you got to give Breece his touches, and Breece is still RB1, and Breece Hall is one of the best running backs in the NFL, but I am very comfortable with Braylon Allen having a decent size role in this offense. I still want to see more from Isaiah Davis as a runner. I don't think we saw the best from him in that game, but he did flash it upside as a receiver. But yeah, as far as guys who stood out to me immediately, Braylon Allen is somebody who, I mean, he looked like one of the best players in the field. He didn't look like he belonged with the backups. Like, that was my takeaway from him.
And you know what? Reminding, because we've been talking about bigger running backs, this just came to mind. I see a lot of Eddie George.
Ooh, I love that.
With him, because Eddie George, people remember he was getting like 3.5 yards a carry with the Titans, where it was just like, let's go that way and bang a little bit. Like, I know there's that, but when he came into the, like, he was fast.
Yeah.
He was quick. And people forget too, like, he would catch like 50 balls a year sometimes. Like, he was their entire offense. I see a lot of Eddie George.
Look, if the Jets got,
which again, if he's a third that good, that's one of the steals of the draft. So
if the Jets got baby Marshall or baby Marshall Faulk in Breece Hall, and then baby Eddie George.
Let's throw down Marshall Faulk. Did he win MVP 3 years in a row or something?
That's why I said Breece Hall is baby Marshall Faulk, because of his pass catching upside and stuff. Right.
You went offensive player of the year 3 years in a row, Marshall Faulk.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I don't know if you're going to bring him up next, but I want to talk about Jarrett Bernard Converse, Mike.
Oh, yeah, he looked great.
That's who I want to talk about, because I think he might have been the best player on either side of the ball for either team in that game. He was targeted, I believe, 6 times by PFF standards, gave up one catch, and we know what that one catch was. It was that ridiculous throw from Jaden Daniels to Dyami Brown, which was perfect coverage. Like, you could not ask for better coverage from Jarrett Bernard Converse. Unfortunately, it was still completed, because a perfect pass and a perfect catch will always be perfect coverage. But besides that, he did not allow a single other catch on 5 other targets all game. I thought he looked fantastic. He also had a couple of run stops. He looked really, really good just all around. I was very, very, very pleased with what we saw from him. And this is a guy who, he didn't get to play in the preseason last year because he was out, I believe, with a foot injury. He was transitioning from corner to safety, because he's moved around a lot in his career. He primarily played corner, I believe, at Oklahoma State. Then he went to LSU, was playing safety, also played some nickel. Then the Jets get him. They move him to safety, and then he's now moving back to corner. So he's like, he's moved around a lot. And then combine that with the fact that he missed all of the summer last year, missed the first half of the year because he was hurt. I am very, very happy that he's getting an entire summer to now work at one position and to just develop as a player. And to see all of that kind of lead to his performance on Saturday, very, very encouraged by that. You know, we've talked a lot about Quantes Diggers this summer. Maybe he could be a guy that can take over for DJ Reed if the Jets do not extend him going into next year. I think Jarrett Bernard Converse definitely deserves to be in that conversation as well.
I think people forget, too, what a crazy athlete he was. Like, he's almost 200 pounds as a corner, 4'4 flat in the 40, 42-inch vertical jump, like almost 11-foot broad jump. Like, this guy's a crazy athlete.
He
for is. A bigger corner. He's got length, too. Like,
yeah, that's why they moved him to safety, because it was like,
he's worth working. Like, there's something there. You just got to keep working with him.
Yep.
Moving on as we end, we're just going to take a little quick look at the Jets' next preseason game against the Carolina Panthers. And this is a game, I remember I talked beforehand last week about how I wanted this to be kind of a Nathaniel Hackett showcase to see what he could do. This I want to be a Jeff Ulbrich showcase, because Carolina did not play Bryce Young in the preseason, and they didn't even play Andy Dalton. So it was Jack Plummer and Jake Luton. Actually, I thought Plummer was actually okay in college. I actually thought he might get like a 7th-round pick.
Where'd he go? Louisville, or where'd he go?
He was Purdue, then he went to Cal, then he went to Louisville. He was all over the place. But 6'5", decent arm. I'm like, he looked terrible against the Patriots. They only scored 3 points. He only gets 80 yards passing, completes half of his passes, and then Luton comes in and looks better. And we know Jake Luton's not an NFL quarterback. So this is a situation where this isn't probably going to be a 34-30 shootout. So I want to see guys like Bernard Converse replicate their strong week one showings. I want to see guys like Quantes really start to ball out. And honestly, make this a Will McDonald showcase, because not only were the Panthers bad, their quarterbacks, but Badar Traore and Ricky Lee were both their backup tackles. Both of them gave up sacks, and one of them got hurt. So this is an exploitable team, and Plummer's not mobile. Luton's not mobile. This is an exploitable team, tailor-made for Will McDonald to say, hey, you know what? Forget about Hassan Reddick. I'm going to get a couple sacks here, and I'm going to show you guys that I could be more than just a third down specialist. It's not going to come off the back of one game, but this is how you start building that reputation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at their depth chart right now, and their offensive line.
Wash your eyes after that. It's tough.
Their offensive line was obviously a disaster last year. Ikem Ekwonu is not been the player that they hoped he would be. Taylor Moten is really good. Taylor Moten's a very good right tackle. But outside of that, they did just sign Robert Hunt, but I assume that the starting offensive line probably won't play, and if they do play, it'll maybe be a series or two. I don't think the Panthers have said if Bryce Young is playing this Saturday. He might. He should.
I don't know why. If anybody needs reps, it's him.
Right. He should be playing, and I know the offensive line is a little bit of a concern, but if they're playing their starting offensive line, it's not that bad. Like, Damian Lewis, Austin Corbett, Robert Hunt, Taylor Moten, Ikem Ekwonu. That's not awful. Like,
you can win with that easily.
Yeah, that's an NFL caliber starting offensive line. They actually made a few moves this offseason.
Played Hunt a gajillion dollars, I remember. We were thinking about him for the Jets, and then we saw that price tag. We're like, ooh. That
contract is crazy for Robert Hunt. I think he's a good player, but that was 20 million. 20 million years, insane.
For 5 years.
But yeah, I mean, looking at their backup tackles, dude, like, I don't even know. I don't know really who Ricky Lee is. Bedard Traore, I don't know who that. I actually don't know any of their backup tackles other than Yosh Nyman, who is another guy, or Yosh Nyman, former Packers tackle. It's a guy we talked about.
He's on PUP though. So.
Exactly, but he's on PUP, so he's not even going to play in this game. I would love for this to be a Will McDonald game. I would absolutely love for this to be a game where the Jets defensive line feasts. Let it be a Will McDonald game. Let it be an Eric Watts game. Leonard Taylor, whoever you want to throw out there, Tack McKinley. This is the game that the Jets defensive line depth needs to show out, because this Panthers offensive line depth is bad. Like, it's even the interior offensive line depth. Like,
Chandler Mays just got hurt, so he's probably not going to play.
Who got hurt?
Cade Mays. So he's probably not going to play.
And he's not even good. Brady Christensen was very bad last year. Chandler Zavala was awful last year. I mean, this Nash Jensen, like, these are terrible players.
You just made that up.
Now I know who Nash Jensen is. I for some reason know that name. I don't know. Oh, Jack Anderson, I know. He was Texas Tech. I actually interviewed Jack Anderson. Anyway, this
back every year I'm convinced there's like one fake player who makes it in. Like, did you ever see that ESPN story about there was this guy, he would go to like different basketball games and he would just like make his own warm-ups and just start warming up with the team and nobody would notice anything different. He was just a random guy.
I did not see that.
And then he did this at like all over the country. Like, he would just get in a warm up, go out with the team and do layups. And nobody would think anything of it. And then somebody's like, I don't know who that is. And then he'd have to like run away. And that's he did this a bunch every year in the preseason. I think there's a guy like that where he just,
there's some names
that's on a uniform and runs out there and nobody stops him.
There's definitely names that always feel made up. They have seven tight ends on their roster, by the way.
Oh yeah.
That's insane. Including two position converts, because they have Jordan Matthews at tight end under contract in the year 2024. And Felipe Franks is still kicking around in the NFL as a tight end on the Panthers right now. That's really funny. They don't even have a lot of backup.
Well, actually, Jesper Horsted was a wide receiver in college. So
Jesper Horsted as well. There you go. So there's another tight end convert. There is, I believe, so I've been looking at, I think there's only one ex-Jet that I've seen that's on this roster, which is actually surprising because the Panthers have had a lot of former Jets in their roster, and it's not even a notable player. It's Claudin Cherlis. I don't know if you remember him. He was with the Jets last summer. Oh, that's a lie. There's two, because Eddie Pinheiro is their kicker.
Oh, the immortal, my Benigno voice. Oh, the immortal Eddie Pinheiro, bro. And
Eddie Pinheiro, who's super accurate if you're kicking from 45 yards or shorter. That's the Eddie Pinheiro that I know. But, and they also have Claudin Cherlis, who was an undrafted player. It was an HBCU he went to. I forget which might have been, like, I forget which school. But he had a good summer with the Jets, ended up getting claimed off waivers by the Panthers. So as far as
– what if I told you Alcorn State?
I was good, dude, I was going to say that. I should have just said it. I was thinking Alcorn State.
And then I'm sure you were.
No, in my head I was like, is Alcorn State even HBCU? Like, that was my first thought. Was like, is it even HBCU? I think it is, but I don't want to sound like an idiot.
Steve McNair went there.
No, I know, and I knew that. I should have just said it. Whatever. I trust your gut, man. But yeah, that's as far as, or if you want to throw Jadeveon Clowney into the almost Jet category, because he was an almost Jet, I feel like, on multiple occasions. But I don't know if he's actually.
We wouldn't have had Hassan Reddick if we got Jadeveon Clowney, and that's how we bring it all back.
That's true. That's
to the
true.
Top. So I think with that, I'm probably going to call time on this. So thank you, as always, for tuning in to the Jet Press podcast. We, of course, have, I'm going to one more time plug the book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers by Ian O'Connor, who also wrote Bill Belichick's biography. It comes out August 20th, wherever you get your books. This is really deep. Even if you're not a Jets fan or a Packer fan, like, this is as deep as you're going to get on Aaron Rodgers, who's a very private person. This goes really in depth behind the scenes, getting into pretty much every aspect of the last couple of years of him. And I came away from it, I don't want to say like respecting him more, but definitely I understand where he's coming from a lot more. And a lot of him makes sense. Now he is, as Ian O'Connor said in our interview, which is also up on our YouTube page, he is a contrarian and a rebel without a cause, sometimes with a cause, sometimes without a cause. But there's a reason and a blend of things that happened in his life that all sort of go into this persona he's created. So a very good book. You could check out our interview with Ian O'Connor on the Jets YouTube page, the Jet Press YouTube page, excuse me. And you could subscribe there. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We are on all those platforms. So Justin, take us home.
Yes, sir. Yeah, definitely check out the interview that Mike has up with Ian O'Connor. Definitely good stuff that is up live right now. We also probably have an interview coming up within the next week or so that might go live with friend of the show, Thomas Morstead.
Hey. Like,
we're always doing these. We're always talking with Thomas. Thomas is a great guy. So wonderful to be talking to him again. That should be coming out maybe within the next week. Probably a better update next week when we're doing the show. But until then, thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at @JustinTFreed. Follow the Jet Press at the Jet Press. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. See you guys next time.
See you folks next week.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.